The State Department of Health Services reported 2,883 new cases of COVID-19 today. That's the lowest single-day total in 2 weeks, but Wisconsin's overall trend this month for cases, deaths, and the positive test rate has been up, making us one of the most active states in the country for the novel coronavirus. DHS classifies 68 of Wisconsin's 72 counties as having a very high level of COVID-19 activity. A doctor and public health expert joins us now to talk about where we stand and what needs to happen to turn things around. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how the coronavirus spreads and what's safe and what's not? Are you curious about symptoms, testing, or the public health response? If you work in healthcare, what has your experience during the pandemic been like? What are you seeing these days? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is the Associate Dean of Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, greetings, Rob. Always a pleasure to join you on a beautiful afternoon.
Not bad out there, but kind of some bad news out there, too. What are your thoughts on where we're at in Wisconsin with these latest coronavirus numbers?
Well, when I look at the trends in Wisconsin, it's very similar to what we see across the entirety of the United States. We are now in our third peak or our third wave. I don't think we're anywhere near our peak yet, but unfortunately, this third wave is looking worse than the first two, at least in terms of cases.
Right. If there's one bit of good news, and we've talked about this before, it seems like the second and third waves on the upside haven't had the, critical mortality rates we saw with the earliest waves, especially in the New York City region. Is that accurate, first of all, and why is this different?
Well, I think that's quite accurate, and the reason is probably multifold. First and foremost, we have learned some better techniques in how we approach patients, how we treat them. Many new novel approaches have been implied. So number one, if people are admitted to the hospital, they're more likely to survive at this point in time. Number two, as we've geared up more and more testing, we're finding more of the low symptomatic and asymptomatic cases. And then, you know, I think even further than that, we're now just a little bit smarter about when to come in. So people are coming into the hospital and getting care earlier on. So there's a number of things that we're doing that really help to ameliorate. Unfortunately, because of the incredible expansion in cases, we are now seeing about 1,000 deaths a day across this country. So even though the risk of dying is lower per case, we're still realizing this incredible and very, very sad toll on a daily basis.
Let's talk about prevention. There have been some comments that, hey, this is a virus. We're not going to be able to control it. We have to focus on treatments and hopefully a vaccine soon. I'm guessing from having talked to you before, you're not ready to give up on trying to contain or at least limit the spread of this thing just yet.
Well, the talk about giving up and relying on medical interventions is unfortunately not a very wise choice. Our medical interventions are reasonable, but we have no cures as of yet. We have medications that can help reduce the symptoms, but we don't really have any good intervention that I can provide to you and prevent you from getting ill. Likewise, the vaccines we have out there are being studied right now, and we're hoping to have some coming along for the first few doses, perhaps by the end of the year or more likely next year. But again, once we start immunizing, it will take months before we get this under control. And we have to do things in the meanwhile. And the things we can do, as you know, I feel that I've said this over and over and over again, are the masking, the distancing, the hand washing, staying home when you're ill. you know, getting tested if you're positive, isolation, if you're exposed, going into quarantine. And these things all work. We know across the world, in a lot of different settings where they have not had any vaccines, have not had any known medications, it goes away. Take a look at New Zealand. They did this all without any intervention other than the public health interventions.
And flipping it around, it seems like, and again, broken record here, the worst case scenarios for spreading the disease inside, crowded, no masks, lots of talking or other things that can help propel the virus. Again, even if we don't have symptoms, we could be carrying it. We could not have symptoms yet. Those are the things, those are kind of the easiest conditions, it seems like, to spread the virus. Is that about right?
Absolutely. I went on a nice walk yesterday afternoon. But by the time I got back home, I was cold. It was windy. It was a little bit damp out. And it feels really good to be inside where it's nice and warm. However, when we are all driven inside, the density of people goes up and the likelihood of encountering the virus also increases.
We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices, looking at the latest news, numbers, and information and advice on preventing the spread of COVID-19. You can join in with your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Frank is with us in Door County. Frank, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm a Lutheran minister in Door County. I've been trying to do my best to educate people and keep senior citizens up here alive. My issue is that we are doing a poor, if not criminal, job of distancing ourselves, doing the things that that you were speaking about, and mitigating the effects of this virus or the opportunities to contract this virus. My observation is that we are a people of hubris. We are not disciplined as a nation, and many are calling us to an undisciplined lifestyle in these times, and that's leading to these deaths. I have a friend who's a PhD MD at Johns Hopkins, and they've been running all sorts of, you know, statistics as to probabilities of what this would be looking like next summer, given the varieties of flu possibilities. And if we continue to be who we are now, we could easily see, he says, a million deaths by July 1st. If we do not, even with the vaccine, because this will take a long time to get this number of people vaccinated.
And Frank, while I've got you on the line, I wanted to ask, people obviously in tough times, many want to turn to you and your congregation and your church for comfort in a time like this. How are you working to provide that while still providing the physical safety that you were talking about?
We had our 28th Sunday of physically distanced worship in the parking lot, and people on FM radio in our parking lot this Sunday. Two services on an average Sunday, physically distanced in their cars. We had our annual meeting in the parking lot this Sunday. We're using Zoom technology for all of our meetings. We are very, very careful. We've only had two members of the congregation with COVID. Both have recovered well. But the reality is that not my congregation so much, but many people that I see walking the streets of Door County all summer and now even in the fall do not wear masks, do not socially distance. And this is, I think, just a microcosm of the United States, which I talk to other clergy about throughout the United States.
Frank, thanks a lot for calling in. Dr. Tempty, we heard a lot from Frank there. He is working on this thing, encouraging others too, but he's not seeing everybody pick up the message.
Well, I'd first like to thank Frank for his service and, you know, this wonderful testament on the role of sacrifice and how we have to be in this all together to get to a communal point of well-being. And it is difficult. He mentioned that his congregation has been meeting distantly, as has mine. I have consulted with my congregation, and their decision was it is safest and best to meet in distance, meet virtually, meet in the parking lot, and so on. But as I mentioned in the past, this is a very tenacious virus. And unfortunately, when we look at the maps of the world, of the United States, of Wisconsin, of our own counties, this is seeded everywhere. This is really out there. And we have to approach life that we could be infected without knowing it and spread it to our loved ones or to total strangers. Conversely, people we're in contact with have that potential as well. And unless we get this under control, we're not going to see the ability to get back to business as usual. If you have 50% of the population worried about this, it's still going to have dramatic impacts on those businesses that rely on 100% of people coming in. And so we just have to get it in our heads that we're in this together, and we all have the ability to have an impact. And so the plea goes out, as Frank had mentioned, that this is a time for personal sacrifice, but for finding new and unique ways of reaching out to each other.
Frank, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty, Associate Dean of Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the state of COVID-19 here in Wisconsin. Taking your questions and thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about COVID-19 symptoms, treatment, and what we can do to flatten the curve? Do you have a question about how the virus is spreading? What kind of activities are high or low risk? Do you still feel hope that Wisconsin can turn things around? And if you work in healthcare, what are you seeing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Dr. Jonathan Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also chair of the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices, looking at COVID-19 in the state and how to slow it down. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers now. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, hello.
Hi, I love your show, by the way. And I love you. You're awesome. I was exposed last Monday, and it wasn't my employer. I don't want to say who it is because I don't want to get yelled at anymore, but they're going by the 6-foot rule for 15 minutes yet. So I worked with a guy last Monday that had it. He came up positive. So Thursday I started having a cough. My chest hurt a little bit, and they escorted me out of the building. So I went to the doctor. I said, the doctor's like, well, were you exposed to anybody that had that came up positive? I said, yeah. I was like working with this guy, and I got chewed out up and down because of that, because I wasn't within 6 feet of him for 15 minutes. And then this morning when I finally did come back after being quarantined for 10 days, I still got reamed up and down by the HR and my boss. I just can't believe it. I mean, you know, they care more about their dollars than they do like their employees. But luckily I came back negative, but I just couldn't believe I got chewed out like that.
Nick, thanks. I'm glad you got the negative test there. I hope you're feeling all right now. Dr. Tempty, Nick feeling like his workplace isn't taking distancing concerns seriously, it sounds like.
Yeah, one of the things that we really emphasized very early on is the important role of employers and human resources individuals within companies and other entities, that this is one where for the benefit of the entire operation, we have to take a very serious approach and to provide individuals with a time off that is suggested by public health, be it isolation or quarantine. Early on, I worked with a colleague of mine from Beijing in a scientific study of what was happening in that country. And what really struck me is that with this experience in China, when people were pulled out of the workplace, they were assured of having meals delivered at home. If they had childcare responsibilities, that was provided. And in a large city like Beijing with 34 million people, they were able to contain this actually very quickly. But it really depends on having that human resources, having the respect for that individual, what they're going through. None of us really want to isolate at home for 10 days. None of us want to quarantine for 14 days. But that's kind of part and parcel of what we're going through right now because this is such a contagious virus.
Thanks for that call. Before we go back to our callers, Dr. Tepti, quick question about if one member of a household has a positive test, what are some ways to, and, you know, they got to live together. They don't have access to a second place to live. How do we reduce the risk of transmitting it within a household in that case?
Well, first and foremost, we do know that when somebody is positive in a household, the risk to others is relatively high. It doesn't mean everyone's going to come down with it. We think it's about one out of every four individuals, but the risk goes up. But, you know, things such as isolation, having that infected person move into their room, kind of quarantine off part of the house for that. If there is an extra bathroom for that person alone, they should use that one bathroom. We know that many situations we don't have that luxury. But trying to keep that person having as little contact with other members as possible, and when contact does occur, other members of the household really should keep the distance. The individual who is ill should be masked, and the amount of time being spent in close contact should be minimized. So the CDC has recently changed their criteria from 15 minutes at one time within 6 feet to a cumulative of 15 minutes over a 24-hour period. And so we can see in a workplace situation where you're having frequent contact with another person, even though it might be for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, if that accumulates to over 15 minutes over the course of a day, your risk for contracting the virus goes up substantially.
Talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty from UW's School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at COVID-19. Back to your calls. Aaron is with us in Madison. Aaron, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Aaron?
At the beginning of the COVID outbreak, my boyfriend was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, and so has been going to treatments here in Madison at UW. And for some of the time I've been able to visit, some of the time I haven't been able to, and in fact, recently he's been hospitalized. So I just wanted to talk about what Wisconsin can do to better help the citizens understand that this is more far-reaching than anybody understands. Like the fact that people who are already sick are having to be more isolated. So I was just wondering if there is anything else that the state can do besides the mandate to help others understand that this is impacting people who are already suffering, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Aaron, thanks for the call. Best to you and your boyfriend. Dr. Tempty, your thoughts.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for that point because that is really important. Across the United States at any given time, there are at least 10 million individuals who are immunocompromised due to illness, due to therapies for illness, or other reasons. And we oftentimes don't think of them and we don't recognize them, but people who, like your boyfriend, might be going under treatment for a cancer, people who have asthma and are on high doses of prednisone. But these people are immunocompromised, and one of the ways we can protect them is doing everything we can to minimize the ability to transfer disease. So one thing that we really emphasize is making sure you're up to date with all of your immunizations. We've talked a lot lately about making sure we're getting immunized to influenza for this upcoming flu season. But that's really important. The other thing is if you are sick, staying at home, having that common courtesy. And again, we have to really work with the workplaces to allow that to happen. It's a multifactorial problem out there, but working together, I think we can solve it. And we're in the midst of, you know, this pandemic, which is the worst pandemic of a respiratory virus that we've seen in over 100 years. And we need to step up to the plate and act like that and take the necessary steps to bring this under control.
And just our last minute, Dr. Temte, can you tell us, you mentioned vaccines hopefully starting to be available soon. In a minute, what does it take to go from they're available to lots of people are getting them?
Well, the state of Wisconsin has a vaccine allocation subcommittee of their state disaster medical advisory committee. And I'm part of that. And we're starting to look at how we distribute a vaccine once it gets to the state of Wisconsin to assure that the people who need it the most get it first and make adequate planning so everybody gets the vaccine in due time. So we're very, very hopeful. We have now four vaccines undergoing clinical trials in the United States right now. We're hoping that all four of them are home runs. And we'll just keep on working on this to make sure that when they are available, they get to people. At the same time, it's really important that when vaccines are available and are shown to be safe and effective, that people are willing to receive them.
Dr. Temte, thanks a lot for joining us again.
And thank you so much, Rob. Have a good afternoon.
You too. That's Dr. Jonathan Temte, Associate Dean of Public Health and Community Engagement at UW's School of Medicine and Public Health. He chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. He's with us to talk about the latest on COVID-19 here in Wisconsin.